And welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. This week has been quite exciting in the world of Albanian politics. So I thought instead of inviting some politicians here to talk about it, why not bring some foreign residents who've lived here for a good few years to get their perspective on things? I'm joined in the studio today by Richard Russell, the owner of an online marketing company in Tirana, married to an Albanian lady, the lovely Olta, and with a young daughter called Mia. And I'm also joined by Jessica Dorneden, co-founder and at a marketing and tech agency. Welcome to Inside Albania, and I'm looking forward to what I'm sure is going to be a rather interesting discussion today. But first of all, I've given you a slight introduction already, but can you sort of tell us, I mean, I know this, but where are you from? What do you do in Albania? Why did you come here? How long have you lived here? Richard?
I have lived in Albania for almost 7 years. I come from Scotland, near Glasgow. I came for work originally, and I met the lovely Olta and decided to stay. And we are now living in Tirana, where we've stayed since I came here, and we're now married with a young daughter. So, yeah.
But why Albania? What brought you here in the first place?
Genuinely work.
Yeah.
Work. It could have been, if somebody said the same offer, but in a different country, I would have gone. I had no preconception or anything about the country, and it continues to shock me and amaze me on a daily basis.
It's like equal measures of both.
Absolutely.
Never a dull day in Albania.
Correct.
Jessica, same question to you.
Yeah, similar story, I guess. I didn't come from work. I came because I met my boyfriend through working online before I came here. Originally, I'm from Germany, lived in England for 11 years. And then I came here and I ended up staying. And now 5 years later, I'm still here.
Still here. It seems to happen quite a lot. I mean, it's sort of my story as well. Sort of ended up coming here and then, you know, 6 years, a kid later, still here.
Yeah, still here.
Seems to have that effect on people. Okay, so the first topic I want to discuss this week is what happened in Parliament. So Albania made headlines internationally this week, unfortunately for the wrong reasons, I have to say. A parliamentary session descended into absolute chaos. During a scheduled vote on the 2024 budget, members of the opposition piled chairs in the middle of the room, set off smoke bombs, and then lit a small fire. You can check out the video behind me to see exactly what went down. I just want to give you a bit of background on what led to this situation before we get into your reactions. And I can tell by the facial expressions already. So Salih Berisha, former prime minister and president, who's sanctioned by the US and the UK and currently under criminal investigation in Albania, said that the government led by Prime Minister Edi Rama was trying to silence them. He said the goal of the disturbance in Parliament was to bring pluralism to the assembly. Now, last month, Berisha and his son-in-law were charged with corruption over a land deal involving the grounds of a sports club in Tirana. He's been accused of using his influence as prime minister between 2005 and 2009 to exert pressure on institutions to conclude the deal in favour of his son-in-law and himself. His son-in-law was placed under house arrest a day after the chaos in Parliament. But Berisha, as an MP, has immunity, but he has been ordered not to leave the country. He claims Rama made up the charges against him, sort of influenced the judicial system, something which the Prime Minister denies. The opposition also wants to create parliamentary investigative commissions to probe alleged cases of government corruption. But the ruling socialists, who have a majority in Parliament, say the requests are not in line with the constitution. As a result, the opposition said it will not allow Parliament to carry out its work. We had reactions from the EU and the British Embassy this week, which I'm sure we're all quite familiar with. They're, you know, deeply shocked, very concerned. We must work together, collaboration, etc. But they've all called on the opposition and the Socialist Party to make friends and, you know, find a way forward, which, when you look at the footage, seems easier said than done. Now, I also asked Twitter what they thought about what went down as well. Highly scientific poll. I said, do you think setting off flares, smoke bombs and lighting fires like we saw in Parliament is the right way to do things? 79% said no. And 18% said yes. Maybe that was Berisha sort of voting repeatedly. I'm not sure. But I want to ask you, we are from the UK. We had Boris Johnson. So, you know, we're not coming from a position of, you know, a much better situation. But what do you think? And how did people react, people that you know outside of Albania, how did they react to this situation?
It's laughable. It's just laughable. I mean, they're supposed to be politicians leading the country. To us, to me personally, it looks like football hooligans. It reminds me of a really bad football match, and these people are supposed to be showing, promoting democracy, leading in a sensible and intelligent fashion how to lead a country. It doesn't set an example for anybody. Mm-hmm. They're wanting to get into EU and be taken seriously as an up-and-coming country with development, etc. That can't be taken seriously. The opposition party, that behaviour is just so unprofessional. It does nothing for the country. It does nothing for the credibility of the party or the country internationally or for the population. It's just silly, silly behaviour, in my opinion.
Jessica, I saw a comment of yours and it was something along the lines of, you know, it was a bit embarrassing to say that you live in Albania after all this has been going on. What did people say to you about what happened? Because, I mean, this was news all over the world.
Yeah, I actually heard about it from people that I know before I saw it on the news myself, because I just, you know, check the news like once a day. So, you know, I have people that are reaching out that are like, oh, is everything okay over there? Like, are you at risk? Like, should you be leaving the country because that's your government over there? What's happening? And then I always think, I have foreign clients and they already have less trust in our work because we're not based in the US or in the UK, and I have to send them invoices. And then I think, great, they're like, so where do you live? Albania?
And it's really, like, they hesitate.
They do hesitate.
Wow. Yeah,
because they're like, hey, if you steal my money, am I ever going to get it back? And we're trying really hard to like do our work and to be reliable and whatnot. But the international news that make it out is
That's
stuff
really
like this, when I'm like, great, this is what people see. And this is what they then associate with us being here, working here.
Do you have foreign clients for your business?
99% of my clients are UK-based.
And do they ever...
They will only talk to me.
They don't trust...
They will only talk to me.
Wow.
So I have people here that do work for me, but they will only talk to me. And they will never talk about money to the Albanians.
Wow.
Which is a really sad thing, because the guys that I've got working for me, they're highly intelligent. They work much harder than a lot of the people in the UK who have just got their hands stuck out for benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They're nice, genuinely nice people, and things like this really do nothing to help
Albania's
reputation globally. The news external to Albania is just not good for Albania.
No.
When you see stuff like this, you just... I'm not a fan of any politician greatly, but Mr. Rama must be just sticking his head in his hands going, what on earth is going on? I'm trying hard to get tourism, etc.
I have a bit of an anarchist streak in me. I love a good protest. I don't think violence is necessary in a process, but a bit of civil disobedience, if there is a real reason to, I'm not against it. You know, I have this... I think I organised my first protest at the age of 11. We sat down in the school playground and refused to move over the war in Iraq or something. You know, I like to protest, but this is a bit far for me. However, I don't want to take away the credibility or the importance of the claims that the opposition have said. You know, they said there is problems with corruption, members of your government have been arrested, huge amounts of money are potentially going missing or being misappropriated. You're not debating things properly in Parliament. Like, this vote on the budget was passed with 5 minutes of discussion. The Italy migrant deal was not discussed in Parliament. You know, they have concerns about democracy, about the power of the government, about corruption, which I think are valid. I mean, they have their right to say them. How do you reconcile this, which they see as a very strong need, which they also argue is damaging the country? You know, corruption, scandals, these are damaging everyday people. How do you reconcile sort of this protest, if you like, with what we saw on the screen? How can they go about it in a different way? How can they stop Parliament? How can they shock people?
You said it yourself, they have the right to say. In Parliament, it's speaking. That's what Parliament's about, it's discussion. They need to organise a discussion, or better, that's street violence, what they're doing. That's just, that does nothing to encourage, it does nothing to encourage a better level of discussion. It's just it'll create a vicious circle of things getting worse and worse. And it's like they're cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what you'd expect from a politician on a global scale. It's tribalistic and animalistic behaviours, in my opinion. It does nothing for the country. It does nothing to forward discussion.
Jessica, when an opposition has valid concerns, or what they see as valid concerns about democracy, the rule of law, corruption, is this acceptable in that context?
I don't know. I was comparing it the other day to children at daycare. Like, if one child hits another, is it okay to just hit back? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And at the end of the day, I think the whole corruption thing, it runs so deep that I wouldn't say that half the people that are complaining about corruption, probably if you started digging, you'd find some stuff. Because at the end of the day, that was one thing that I was really surprised about when I came here, just how corruption is an everyday thing for every single person. You want to get something done? Well, the guy that you're speaking to that's supposed to be dealing with your application is kind of hinting at the fact that it would be faster if you dropped some money. And it's extremely shocking when you come here because we're not used to that. There's a process, you book an appointment, you fill out your forms, you bring the fee, stuff gets signed, and if it's within the rules, it gets approved. And I think the discussion about corruption goes way, way, way deeper. Mm-hmm. And it is just acceptable pretty much everywhere in day-to-day life. So why are we looking at corruption at the highest level when everyone else is kind of also
complicit, if not corrupt,
doing it themselves?
Albania's 12th national census has concluded, during which teams of census takers visited every home in the country to survey inhabitants, asking questions related to work, age, household, religion, ethnicity, language, and also, if I remember correctly, excuse the pun, do you have problems with your memory? That's one of the questions I got asked. Now, the process has not been without controversy, with reports of the fancy new tablets used to take the census not working, manipulation, and a general sense of census cynicism. Try saying that quickly. Now, my experience of the census was a young lady knocked on my door. She didn't speak any English, which is fine for me. And she said, oh, well, you know, I've been knocking 3-4 times this week. And I was like, we haven't, because I work at home and I haven't seen you. Anyway, she came with a pad of paper and she said, my tablet's not working. Can I take some information from you here? I was like, yes, sure. And she handed me the paper and asked me the questions. And I looked at it and I could see all the personal data of everyone in my apartment block as well, you know, just in case I was interested, you know. And I had to answer my name, who lived in the house, where I'm from, religion. She wanted me to write other, you know, and I was like, no, atheist. Well, I'm sometimes agnostic, but, you know, that was a bit of a long discussion to get into in my doorway. And then my partner was inside and he said, oh, can you fill out mine as well? And she said, yeah, sure. So without even seeing him, I was able to fill in his details. I could have made it all up, you know. Anyway, she went on her way and I realised that this was not how the census is supposed to be taken. So I called and I complained. And a couple of days later, a very friendly young man turned up at my door with a badge and, you know, a pen and with Instat on and a tablet that was working. And he didn't speak a word of English, which again is not a big problem for me, but there are many people in the country who do not speak Albanian particularly well. And we went through and we got to the end and I said, but you haven't asked me about my religion. And he was like, oh, I did that bit. I said, show me the tablet. And there was a whole section which was religion, ethnicity, language, etc., which he'd either filled in or skipped or like just written something and moved on to the next one. I said, no, I want to answer these questions, because he'd put my ethnicity as English. And you being a Scot will know that that is, you know, a terrible offence if you're not completely English. And I said, no, I need you to go back. I want to answer these questions. And he said, well, I can't, because once you've entered an answer or skipped it, you can't. And I was like, well, that looks like a little note icon. He was like, yes. I was like, so make a note on each one and then you can fix it later. And he was like, okay. So we went through and I managed to specify my answers to these very important questions. My reasoning was that perhaps because I'm not Albanian, he thought things like ethnicity, religion were maybe not relevant. I don't know. That's my reason. But that was my experience with the census. Did you do the census? How was your experience?
A lovely girl came to knock on our door. I was like, what's this about? She's like, census. I'm like, oh, I heard that's coming. She asked me, what's my name?
In English or Albanian?
In broken English, but yep. She didn't try Albanian anyways. But yeah, so I told her my name and then she was like, okay, that's it. And I was like, okay, don't you want to know who else lives here? And don't you have some questions to ask? And she was like, ah. And then she looks at the other girl that was coming and she's like, yeah, no, it's fine. Thank you. And then they left. And then 5-6 days later, I was at my friend's house for dinner. And conveniently, just at the time that me and my boyfriend were at our friend's house, the census people turned up. And they requested that both of them come to the door. They asked them all of those questions. No, they're English. And my boyfriend came to help to translate. And we got it all filled out. But they spent easily 20 or 30 minutes answering all the questions. So I had two very different census experiences. So I was like, okay, right.
Did you complain?
No, I didn't.
No.
Yeah, at the end of the day, sort your stuff out. you want to do a census, make sure that the people who are doing it also want to do a census.
Yes, I think they were definitely thrown off by the presence of foreigners, but there's around 15,000 of us in Albania at the moment. So I feel there should have been a bit more preparation rather than just sort of this look of panic when a foreigner, when a Huai answers the door. Richard, did you do the census?
I opened the door to a lovely lady who...
They're all lovely.
Who was lovely. Utterly terrified at the fact that there was a 193-centimetre foreigner standing in front of her. And she held up a tablet in my face. And I said, in Albanian, what can I do for you? And she looked at me and said, foreign. That's all she said. Ihuai. I went, pa. And she went, di sheep, pa. Kosh gruai. Branda. Okay. And that was the end of my conversation with her. Because she spoke to my wife, because she's obviously Albanian. And even though I was speaking Albanian and I can understand it perfectly, she didn't want to speak to me. I don't know any idea of any of the questions that are on that form. I have no idea what was filled out for me. My wife could have called, said that I'm Mars or something. She probably thinks that a lot of the time anyway.
God knows what she said about you.
I'm terrified.
He won't be here in the next census.
So she did. She was in the house and she was in the house. She sat at her dining room table for a good 20 minutes having a lovely conversation with my daughter and my wife. I have no idea what was discussed because I left
probably
the room.
Talking, you know, trying to figure out who they knew in common or if they were distant cousins. Or
I'll probably tell my wife to put socks on my child and make sure she's warm.
Yeah.
Just typical Albanian things. So, you know, she had a long conversation about me and our household, of which I had absolutely zero involvement because I left the room and continued working. And that was it.
I mean, I'm really pro census. You know, I think it's very important that the government has an idea. But I think there's two issues. One, they didn't know how to approach foreign residents. You know, obviously, it's very important to know which foreigners are here, where we're from, etc. But it also, we in a way don't want to skew the Albanian side of things as well, if that kind of makes sense. But they're not doing it properly like this, as we've... I mean, we're just three people. Imagine the other 15,000. That sows seeds of great distrust when there are already sows of distrust in terms of the overall results, you know, the final results, especially when it comes to things like religion, like ethnicity, like Bulgarian, Macedonian, Slav, whatever. Not whatever, but I don't want to upset anybody. Greek. So this is really problematic. I don't really know what the results are going to say, but I don't think anyone's going to believe them because our experiences have not been good. Moving on to the next topic, asylum seekers and migration. So as of September 2023, the number of Albanians seeking asylum in the EU fell by 37% to around 5,000 when compared to last year. France is still the number one preferred choice, followed by Germany, Italy and Switzerland. Germany. Now, the number of Albanians heading to the UK has also decreased significantly from 2022, when over 16,000 sought asylum there. God knows why. The food is terrible and so is the weather. Now, this is due in part to new bilateral measures taken by the British government and the Albanian government to stem the flow of people crossing the channel. It also came after the British government said and maintains that Albania is a safe country and therefore asylum requests are unfounded. Other countries in Europe have taken this stance. France as well. And it's a general sort of blanket no to asylum cases, except sort of a handful. Also this week, a national survey by the Institute for International Studies in Albania found that half of Albanians want to emigrate in the next 5 years. I think it was around 30-something percent have literally got their suitcases ready, citing corruption and misgovernance as one of the biggest reasons behind their decision. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. But I think it's really interesting to have the perception of people who've come to live here out of choice, for Albanians that want to leave. Now, my first question, and we're going to open a can of worms here. Jessica, why do you think so many Albanians want to leave?
From my friends that I know, it's just they feel there's no opportunity for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like any of them are really doing anything to make an opportunity happen, but they seem to think that as soon as I go abroad, the opportunity will be there because I'm abroad, and that's it. But there isn't really any specific reason other than everyone else does it. I think mm-hmm. I should do it.
Do they think it's sort of, oh, in the UK, you know, you can get a minimum wage. I'm not sure what the minimum wage is in the UK at the moment. That's, say, £1,500 or something. And they think, oh, I'm going to have £1,500 in my pocket. They don't understand the cost of living.
I have done that math for people multiple times. Like, even I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe one day I could go back there. And then I'm like, well, now that I look at what everything costs and the way salaries have gone down and are significantly lower than for the same job in the US, for example, mm-hmm. I'm like, it's not really worth it because you pay all that rent, you pay the food, you pay your electricity and gas and stuff, and then you're broke.
Yes.
And that's the life choice. But still, even after having that argument, and I've had that argument more times than I can count, the response is still at the end of the day, oh, well, it's still better than being here.
I, you know, I interviewed an Albanian living in Malta a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, yeah, I came here because everyone told me that the salary is a lot higher. He said, but honestly, the salary is a lot higher, but by the time I've paid my rent, my fuel, my food, my electric, my water, blah, 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 it's probably breaking even with the same ratio of salary left at the end of the month as I would do if I was in Albania. You know, he said, I have more in my pocket, but my costs are so much higher that I'm left with basically the same amount at the end of the month. Richard, why do you think people are wanting to leave?
I think it's a grass is always greener on the other side type perception. And I've had exactly the same conversation with people. You sit and they go, and it's like they don't listen or they don't want to hear what you're saying. I'm like, go to the UK and you sit all day in this coffee shop procrastinating about what you're going to do and not doing anything here. But when you go to the UK, you're going to have to work a lot harder, and you're not going to be able to behave the way you do with bosses here, and you can't do the stuff you do in work there because the rules and regulations are way different. That's if you get a job, because you probably won't, and you're starting minimum wage, and then your housing costs are astronomical, and then you've got tax on this and tax on that, tax on the next thing. And when you go into the shops and you pick up your patlijan, that's the price for one, not per kilo. That's my wife had a near heart attack in Tesco's when we went last year.
I remember seeing a loaf of bread in a bakery in London for £12. It's some like artisanal,
Wow. We have exactly the same example of a loaf of bread for £4.50 in a baker's. My wife mm-hmm. having a near heart attack at it, going, but it goes off in a day as well. And they're not willing to accept the fact that, yes, you might get a little bit higher salary, but in actual fact, you're not going to get it unless you've got friends and family. You're just not going to get mm-hmm. a big salary because you're a foreigner and you're automatically discriminated against. I don't care how you put it, but it's discrimination against them.
Yes.
So you're going to be on the bottom rung of salary where the costs are way, way, way higher. You're going to have no money left. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a miserable existence in crappy weather, in a crappy house, in a crappy area, and people won't like you.
Do you not think that it's easy for us to come here and say this? You know, you have a business, most of your clients are international, our salaries are probably significantly higher than the people we're talking about. Do you not think that we have an element of privilege? It's all very well and good for us to come to Albania, live comfortably, and say, oh, the grass isn't greener, etc., and say, you should stay here, suck up the corruption and the €400 a month and get on with it.
I started as a dishwasher when I was 14, on £2 an hour. I've worked all the time. I didn't just walk in and have mm-hmm. a big salary and big money and lots of contacts and all these British. I worked. Mm-hmm. I've worked every single day of my life. I don't sit in a coffee shop all day and say, well, they get it, so I should get it. I've had conversations with close relatives of the family and friends of the family here who say, I will not work for 30, 35,000, 40,000. Like, I am better than that. And I ask, What experience do you have? It's irrelevant. I'm better than that. That's not an argument.
I started,
you need to work.
14, I started in the kitchen of a restaurant, washing dishes, then waitressing. You know, I don't even know how much I was earning. It was probably about $3.50 an hour, something like that. You know, I've done terrible jobs over the years in between other jobs, you know, trying to get where I am today. Because I do hear this, foreigner privilege, and we do have it. We have passport privilege as well. But what's your view on this in terms of our position?
In the same way, I mean, I have been working in daycare for I don't know how many years, and anyone that's ever worked in daycare knows that you don't get paid anything for the amount of hours that you're having to do. Even if you have your own business, it can always happen that things go downhill. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not guaranteed, you know, nobody pays me a salary at the end of the month if I choose not to do any work, or if I get sick, or if I whatever. So I still have to put that work in. I still have to show up all the time. And it doesn't really matter where I do that. And I think, yeah, you have some foreigner privilege, you know, but the police are very nice. You know, it's very friendly. I've always had a good time.
Yes.
But then on the flip side, I've also been denied my change back in a taxi, and I couldn't argue with the guy because he pretended that he couldn't understand me, and I'm alone in a taxi at night. What am I going to do about that? You know, so I've also had reverse unprivileged.
Yes, people charging higher prices, except it happened. Someone tried to charge me €9 for 3 pieces of burek. Oh. In the summer,
that's good, direct.
Yeah, really good. But yeah, this is something I am conscious of. You know, I say, oh no, you know, you should try and stay and make an opportunity. And I think, yeah, but it's easy for me to say because I can go pretty much wherever. Well, I could before Brexit anyway. The last time I tried to go to Brussels, I got pulled aside for interrogation. It's like, I'm not going to seek asylum. It's not that bad, you know. But no, you're right. You know, it's you. We make the opportunities for yourself. Like I have done, like you have done. I left home at 16, nearly 17 years old. You know, the grass is not always greener on the other side. And I also want to say as well, while in England things may work a bit better, there may be less government corruption out in the open. You know, maybe there is a higher quality of life. But I always say to people, what about the crime rate? I've been mugged 3 times on the street.
Same.
At knife point. I've had my house broken into. You can't leave your kids out of eyesight for a split second, you know? The weather's terrible, the food's terrible. It's here, yes, there are a lot of problems, as in every other country of the world, but it's safe. Mm. The weather's beautiful, it's interesting, the food is better. It's, for me, this is, I'm sure people watching will disagree. And I want to ask, do you think Albania is a safe country in terms of asylum? Because people are going, saying political persecution, LGBT, they have problems with that, blood feuds, organised crime. Do you know of cases where maybe asylum is justified? Do you think it's fair to say Albania is a safe country?
I think that in every country there will be a case for asylum to go somewhere else, for everything. There will be some cases, but I think that Albania is a very safe country. I will give you a perfect example. My wife and I went to Glasgow. My wife at 5 p.m. said, I am terrified. Can we please go back to the hotel? I don't like it here. That's in Glasgow. She was terrified of the street because of the way the people behaved. There was too much drunkenness. There was too many people shouting. Admittedly, Glasgow is probably not the best example of place, but that's where I come from and where I grew up. And I didn't realise how bad it appears to people.
Yeah.
I would be much happier for my wife to walk, although I wouldn't let her do it. Not let her, but I would be asking her to get a taxi or go and meet her. I would happily let her walk from the block all the way up to her house.
Yeah.
And I would have no fear that anything's going to happen to her any time of any day of the night.
There's nowhere I would.
In Glasgow, I wouldn't let her walk 50 yards without me going there.
Yeah.
Because I'd be scared for her. Yeah. And it's not because I can't actually fit in and do something too big and skinny, but this country is much, much safer. There are obviously going to be instances that we don't know about and don't get exposed to, and don't get exposed to. But in the same way, there'll be the same thing in the UK, there'll be in America, there'll be in Germany, in France, there's bad people in every country.
Mm-hmm.
But as a whole, I think this country is very safe. People are very welcoming.
I think a lot of the criminals have left.
Absolutely, yeah.
They've gone and sought asylum somewhere.
Yeah, it's a running joke in my family. Yeah.
Okay, I want to move on quickly because I've got so many questions I want to ask you all to the budget. So while they were setting fire to Parliament, the budget was the main topic on the table. Now, the 2024 budget included, and this is just a very quick breakdown, financial support for 50,000 students, salary increases for 30,000 teachers, free textbooks for 231,000 students, reimbursements for medicines, economic aid, financial support for single mothers with multiple children, an increase in public spending, reduction in public debt. We hear this sort of every year from every government in every budget. They want to put the average salary up to 900 euros by the end of next year. I think it's around 600 or so at the moment. And investments will be focused on infrastructure, tourism, agriculture and connectivity and employment promotion as well. Now, this all sounds very well and good, but I want to focus on one thing, tourism. We've been here a similar amount of time. And when I first came here and I said, I live in Albania, people were like, where is that? Where is it? Now it's, I saw Albania in Vogue and I'm thinking of coming next summer. So things have changed a lot in terms of tourism for Albania. We saw 8 million tourists up until, I think it was the end of September, which is huge. Is Albania ready for this? What's going to happen? Are we going to hit a dead wall? Are we going to screw up our chances? Are we going to get a bad reputation? Are we going to end up like parts of Croatia or Spain, which have just turned into drinking holes for British tourists? What's going to happen?
I think that if they get another season out of it, they'll be lucky. Mm-hmm. Literally another season. So the really, really simple litmus test. Go into TripAdvisor and look at Sunium and look at the star rating. If you looked at it 12 months ago, it was 5.5 top. It's now about 2 point something. And it's just rip off, dirty. The government or Eddie or whoever has done a very good marketing job to get people to come here, but it's not been communicated correctly because they're advertising it as a hidden haven with beauty.
The Maldives of Europe.
The Maldives of Europe, but cheap.
Yeah.
We, as a family, decided to go to Abu Dhabi for the summer because it was cheaper to go for 10 days in a 5-star hotel in Abu Dhabi than it was to go to the south of Albania.
Wow. Wow.
We got 10 days in a 5-star hotel there, much cheaper than it was to go to a hotel in the south of Albania. And that was including our flights and everything and food and drinks and everything. And it was just the bare cost to go down south before I hired a car, before I fed my family.
Yeah.
It was cheaper to go to Abu Dhabi. And it's just ridiculous.
That's crazy.
Absolutely ridiculous. The levels of service here are shocking in some of the hotels. There is no such thing as a 5-star hotel here.
But this is difficult because they're very short-staffed. Everyone is leaving. Also because it's a very seasonal, it's sort of 3 months at the moment, the tourist season. So, and what I've heard from employers is they can't find good people. If they do find good people, they leave. They're hesitant to invest in training because they'll just leave after 3 months or not come back or whatever. This is a real issue for them. You know, they can't find the right people. They struggle to train them. Training in tourism, like in a professional way, is not seen as very prestigious here yet, you know, so this is, and I will defend them on that. But if you're coming from Western Europe, America, or whatever, it's going to annoy you.
I grew up in the tourist industry. My parents ran guest houses and self-catering. It was seasonal. We weren't rude to customers. The people that worked for mum and dad seasonally weren't rude to customers. We gave them good service because we know how to behave.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse. I think that's not the employee's fault. I think it's the employer's fault because they're making excuses why they're not investing. It's because they want to keep their profit margins high because they've got this mindset that's a 3-month thing. Look at the flight plans from all the different countries. These flights are running 12 months a year.
And I think we also come for other reasons other than beach.
Yes.
Like we travel for all sorts of reasons. We travel for hiking. We travel for food. And just, you know, being in a place that looks so vastly different, and I feel like there just isn't anything on offer. Like if you compare that to what you can do when you go on holiday abroad, you know, there's trips every day taking you places from the hotel. You can go do diving here, you can do this there, and I just feel like every time we go, I mean, I do get bored pretty quickly, but I'm like a 6 hours at the beach and then I'm like, can I go home please, because I'm sort of finished with it. Loud music, way too loud. I didn't come here to listen to this song for the sixth time this morning. And then I'm kind of like, oh God, like, what am I doing here? And it's a shame because we had lovely trips. Like we've been to Berat not that long ago with friends and we had some amazing food. We ended up buying like jams and things to take back. We had some amazing wine and that was really well done. And we were in a really nice place and I don't know. I wish more people would get to experience that because it tasted so good.
Not the cheap, fast sort of coastside tourism. I want to move on to something else to do briefly with the cost of living. So we've talked about the various things in the budget which are supposed to help ease the burden. I've lived here for 6 years. And although I've sort of adjusted to the prices here, like I don't think in euro anymore and then convert, I have noticed the cost of living has gone up so much, especially for food, basic items. And it's tough. And I wanted to ask for you as well, with foreign salaries, but higher than the average sort of salary, how is the cost of living increases and inflation impacting you?
Exchange rate's terrible. It's killing us. Well, it's not killing us, it's a lie. The exchange rate in, since I've come has meant that everything is fundamentally about 50% more expensive before even inflation kicks in. Because if when I first came here, it was almost 160 lek to the pound, and I think yesterday I was getting 118 or something, 17. So that in itself is a massive drop. So my pound, because all my clients pay in pounds, so I take money out of the business in pounds and then convert, so I instantly lose from them. And that's before we apply the stupid bank charges because we're not in the SWIFT network.
Yeah,
And the card fees and stuff. So I mean, to even transfer into Albanian banks to use Albanian banking system, they just make up the commissions half the time, I believe.
Yes.
And then the card machines with the commissions everywhere.
700 lek.
Even if you use Albanian cards to go to a different bank machine, you're hitting with there's just commission on everything you do.
Yes.
The prices in the last, particularly I think in the last 18 months, they're just getting greedy in some places. Mm-hmm. And it's unjustified, the increases in some of them.
I see prices going up each time I go in the shop. Yeah. You know, I'm paying a different price each day. Are you impacted as well?
I mean, same thing. Getting clients from abroad, I mean, the dollar is ridiculous right now, so we're like, great, you know, we're getting, for every single service we deliver, we're getting less money every single month. That's annoying. But also rent, I mean, I never used to think that it was that cheap here, because yes, a lot of stuff you can get cheap if you buy it local, but if it's imported, and we work in marketing and stuff, we need things like, you might need a new mic because yours breaks, you need a new camera, you're paying a ridiculous price in the shop, and by the time you've added up what you're saving on food and rent, and you take technology or stuff that you need to buy to run your business into account, you are at the same as if I was living in Germany, because a lot of stuff there, like buying shampoo, is a third of the price that it is here. So I've never thought, oh my God, this is so cheap, like I'm benefiting so much from being here. I'm like, no, this is okay. You know, overall, I'm in a good place.
It's not cheap.
But recently we just had to move house because they wanted suddenly 800 a month for the 2-bedroom place that's ancient in Comuna. And I'm like, your place is falling apart. I'm not paying this. Like, I'm leaving. That's what I'm doing. And I just think I can, you know, in the worst case, okay, we'll have to take on another client. We can make it happen. But everyone that lives here cannot make this happen. And I refuse to pay these ridiculously increased prices because my boyfriend's parents cannot just get an extra 200 a month. You know, if something happens there and their rent goes up significantly, what are they supposed to do?
Exactly.
They have their jobs. Pay goes up a little bit here and there, but how? You know, we can't live like that.
Now, I want to ask as well, because I feel we could sit and wax lyrical about Albania, or not so lyrical for, I mean, there's lots of problems here, but I want to know, what do you like about being here? Because maybe the people watching are thinking, well, they should just go back to their own country then, you know.
Usually.
Why are you here? What do you like about being in Albania?
I think the way of life here is much better. I think if you get out of anything what you put into it, and I work hard here, my wife works hard here, part of the probably a small percentage of the population, both foreign and Albanians, actually graft every single day to make a success of where we're here. We have access to lovely restaurants, drinks, people are really nice. Tirana has got its problems with traffic, obviously, and just building everywhere, which is just shocking. But it has got a lot of history, it's got a lot of things to do. There is a nice way of life. It's much better. We were in the UK for 6 months and we hated it every single minute of it. My wife was like, I want to leave after a week.
I want to come back to Albania if I travel for 2 days. Yeah. Jessica, what do you like about being here?
It's just slower.
Yeah.
You know, it's like after living in London, everything is always like, this was needed yesterday, like hurry up. You can't stop anywhere without people like pushing you and things. And I don't know, I enjoy taking it a little bit more slow. I enjoy having that coffee. I enjoy taking time out. I love being outside, and I feel like in England I spend all year inside. In Germany I'd spend all year inside, particularly right now, and we're getting to enjoy it. We're getting to go out, sit by the lake, sit in the sun, and you know, it's just slower and more gentle and
more beautiful.
Nice, yeah.
Do you both intend on staying?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, long term?
Forever.
Yeah. Great. Good. Me too. Well, maybe not after this interview. We'll see how it goes. But that's all for this week. You can watch Inside Albania on Euronews Albania on our YouTube platform and across all major podcasting platforms. But before we go, as you may have noticed, there's a bit of a theme because we have two very important holidays going to come up. So I'm going to need you to wave your little flags at the camera, please. So, Gazua festatin entorit. Mirpavshim. More enthusiasm.